No, none of the eight who are under arrest had anything personal to gain.
But the government, and has the US been held accountable?
No, I mean, I think, you know, I think the, you know, I think the US wouldn't, I don't think the US government would, you know, would bear, they wouldn't admit to bear any responsibility to Bertha's assassination. You know, I think it's important to remember I interviewed her in 2013, just around the elections, and she was publicly denouncing the fact that she had been told and had been made aware that her name appeared at the top of a military hit list in which I think there were 16 activists. She was one of 16 activists. She was telling people this. You know, she publicly
We're
denounced
going
it.
to
I reported
continue
it at
this
the time.
conversation after the
And I...
broadcast, and we'll post it online. Nina Lakhani, thanks so much for joining us. We have a social media full-time fellowship. Check our website. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. And now it's time for our live program. It's called the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. That's local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Thank you for tuning in today. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR.FM, station making waves. Just remember, all my students who are listening, do as I say, not necessarily as I do, in case I mess up on the air, which should never happen, of course. Well, at the top of the news today for this week, which is March 3rd, that is today, 2017. March has begun. Pretty cold out there, and it's snowing a little teeny bit. Thank you very much. Global warming. Which, by the way, that is an ironic comment because this last month, February, of course, 2017, was the second warmest month in Michigan in the history of recorded temperatures in Michigan. And so that was very strange, very unusual. And it definitely does fit the warming trend. But we're a little chillier now, so let's get warmed up here. I want to update the story. A list of area candidates for city council, mayors, other offices in different cities around here. It continues to grow as we approach a deadline of April 25th, by the way. And that's because there will be, as I said last week, I wasn't sure if there was multiple candidates. Would there be a primary? Yes, there will be. It will be August 8th. So mark that on your calendar. That's a Tuesday, obviously. Tuesday, August 8th. That will be, of course, after Dearborn Homecoming, which means you might see a lot of candidates out and about at Dearborn Homecoming, as well as other places around town, too. Here's the follow-up story from last week. This is in the Dearborn Times-Herald. Last week we mentioned three candidates for mayor of Dearborn. Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. is expected to run again for another term. Has not officially announced at this point, as far as I know. And those three people who would be challenging him, Tom Tufelski of our city council, developer Mr. Fakuri, Hakeem Fakuri, I believe, is his first name, and it doesn't have his picture on the front page of the Times-Herald from this last Wednesday, March 1st, but it's interesting that it doesn't mention, and I'm going to turn to the follow-up page, which is all the way 8 pages in. Why did they do that? Why, you know, why does it have to be 8 pages to read the full story? It indicates that the other two candidates, besides Tefelsky, who put their names in the hat, Hakeem Fakhouri, I just mentioned, and resident Edward Binkley. Oh, that's interesting. Jim Perrelli was the one that was mentioned in the last story from last week that I read to you. And now we do not have Jim Perrelli, that name, but we have an Edward Binkley, who I believe is one of those perennial candidates that he has run before. Not sure. In any event, it says that he is the third person on the list, and maybe he's the fourth, in fact. Maybe Jim Perrelli is there, and there is a slight... is it fake news? No, it's just an oversight or a mistake. It's not fake. It's just incomplete, perhaps, or slightly inaccurate, but it's not fake news. The Times-Herald and the Press Guy do the best they can here. So we'll find out, of course. Plenty of time between now and the August 8th primary. There'll be a lot of campaigning that will be done over the summer, especially for people with a name that's not already out there, let's say, on the Dearborn City Council, for example. So in Dearborn, just to sum up, all seven council seats, the clerk and the mayor position will be on the ballot, while Dearborn Heights has four council seats, the clerk, treasurer, and mayor positions. Okay. Eight community members have announced their candidacy for Dearborn City Council, and three for city clerk. So let's talk about those. Apparently, Dearborn's Public Schools Communication Assistant Leslie Herrick. Turning page 8. This is the only local news show on the air where you can hear the pages turning. That's right. We do it directly from the papers. And so, there you go. So, Leslie Herrick is running for the city council. We mentioned that Vivid Maintenance owner and president Regan Ford, is running for council. Also, Dearborn Allied War Veterans Council Commander Sean Green is running for Dearborn Council. Retired Dearborn Police Command Officer Kenneth Paris is running for City Council in Dearborn. Wayne County Reserve Deputy Sheriff Commander Ramez Hadar has also filed for Dearborn City Council. Others without a big-time title, they list separately. Dearborn residents Aaron Burns, that's B-Y-R-N-E-S, Nada Al-Hatunti, and Rifat Hashun, that's H-A-C-H-O-U-N, Al-Hanuti, Nada Al-Hanuti, that's A-L, capital A-L, hyphen, capital H-A-N-O-O-T-I, are also going to be on the ballot for city council. And, of course, if there's more running than what there are seats, there will be, I don't know if they'll be on the primary or not, come to think of it. Maybe the battle will just be longer and you get to choose seven out of the big-time list. So not really sure what's going to be on there. Obviously, we have enough candidates now for mayor. It could just be the top two candidates for mayor will be chosen in the August 8th primary. But how much will the candidates for city council be reduced, if at all, on that primary? I don't know that yet. I don't know that. So we'll find out. And in terms of the city clerk seat, we have former Representative George DeRaney, who had mentioned before that he was thinking of running, and definitely he has filed the paperwork. He has been our state representative for 6 years, and now Abdullah Hamoud is in Lansing, representing the 15th District for us. And along with Duraney, two other candidates, John Shimizi, and Nofila Hadar. Shimizi is S-C-H-I-M-I-Z-Z-I, and Hadar is H-A-I-D-A-R. And they've also filed to run for the Dearborn City Clerk seat. And in Dearborn Heights, the seats on their councils ready to expire are those of Joseph Krasinski, Margaret Horvath, Robert Constant, and Tom Berry. City Clerk Walter Prezowitz and Treasurer John Riley, too. So all we know there right now, according to the story, is that Councilwoman Lisa Hicks Clayton has announced her candidacy for mayor. We mentioned that before on this show. So that's a top story of the day. It doesn't mean it's the best story or the most important story, but there you go. So that's the list of area candidates as we know it now. Still a question of who's running for mayor. Is Edward Binkley back up there? What happened to Jim Pirelli, who was mentioned in stories last week? Perhaps they're both on that list. Okay. Moving on here, the new WHFR Journal proceeds. With some printed stories from directly from the internet. That's always exciting. Late breaking news stories here. Yeah. No, it's a commentary. Okay. It turns out that we mentioned fake news before, that the University of Michigan, I think in Ann Arbor, they've actually created a class. It's entitled Fake News, Lies, and Propaganda, How to Sort Fact from Fiction. It'll be taught first in fall 2017 as a project of U of M's College of Literature, Science, and the Arts, and the U of M Library co-sponsoring that. So I just don't know if it's, I assume it's going to be a credit course, therefore not open to everyone. It doesn't say it's a requirement in the journalism program, where it should be, although it's probably taught all the time. I would just want to mention that there's a little criticism here. This story first appeared in the Michigan Capital Confidential newsletter email, and that is from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy in Michigan, which is a very conservative think tank. And think tank is an oxymoron in their case. I'm not saying they don't think, but they always think in one way. Towards conservative ideas. And their point, and it's fair enough, is that an assistant professor of communication at Merrimack College in Massachusetts created controversy in November. So this is not U of M, folks. But she created her own list of fake news sites, and she included The Blaze, a website created by former Fox News commentator Glenn Beck, Breitbart.com, a news site created by conservative activist Andrew Breitbart, I think their managing editor, of course, was Steve Bannon, before he decided to move into big-time politics and be the numero uno advisor to our new president. So he should know fake news, right? And the National Review, which is, she was mentioned, a website based off the magazine by the same name, started by conservative commentator William F. Buckley Jr., as examples of fake news sites. And I agree with the Mackinac Center here, or the Mackinac Center, because that's ridiculous. You know, Glenn Beck often has very truthful stories that he relays. It gives a lot of opinions, but, you know. Now, Breitbart.com, I'll have to admit, I have never gone there. I only knew what I read, as President Trump would say, on the internet. So I'll just pass on that. But yeah, sooner or later, you say something that really happened, right? I mean, even a fake news site is not totally fake all the time. I think every news site, you should not take the news from a single source and then act on it or form a definite opinion on anything, just like you should not form a definite opinion on anything that I say, including that comment, I guess. Oh, well. So I'm sure the U of M will teach a great course. I just want to say a point for colleges in general. We don't need a separate class to train our students in fake news, because every class we teach, one way or the other, has a component of what's called critical thinking. And critical thinking is when you have a discipline of finding information and verifying it before you take action on anything. And that's called critical thinking. So, you know, I've been an instructor here at the college going on 49 years, going on 50 years now, and it's always that way here at Henry Ford College. It's a tradition of colleges to do that sort of thing. I mean, yes, we have some professors who have a, let's say, a political opinion or religious opinion, depending on the class, and they usually mention it up front so that their students can judge that there will be some bias in what they say, sometimes accidentally, but there will be some slant there. Doesn't mean you totally disregard everything he's saying because he's a liberal or because he's a conservative. Okay, you never want to do that. That's not being open-minded. And the first element of creative thinking, critical thinking, is to be open-minded and to listen closely to what's being said, what's being spoken, what's being printed. And then, when there's opinions out there, support those opinions from other sources too, before you start believing it as absolutely true and before you start making decisions on actions. Okay, that's I'm just saying all college classes to one extent or the other, but most of the so-called communication classes, writing, speaking, those are skills that, you know, you're going to write or speak yourself in a lot of trouble if you don't do critical thinking first. And in fact, it's required for many of the papers that you have to write in a variety of classes. You're not just doing research and retyping stuff that you find. You actually have to organize. You have to create a thesis of your own, which means an opinion, and then you have to support it. That's what happens in college. So I don't know if we need a separate class, but I'm sure it'll be popular. Maybe with someone in a program that doesn't have reading or writing requirements, and I can't imagine what that would be, but oh well. This is Jay Cornick on the new WHFR Journal for March the 3rd, 2017. I was looking at the MichiganRadio.org website this morning for the latest in breaking news, and I just wanted to mention, too, one of their stories here is that the boil water advisory has been lifted in Detroit. I was a little concerned 2 days ago when I heard that Detroit water should not be drunk. That seems awful. But they have taken care of whatever the problem might have been. And it was only parts of Detroit, Hamtramck and Highland Park, only parts of Detroit, parts of Hamtramck, parts of Highland Park, that were within this area. And it's a pretty contiguous area, as they say. I see a map here. But it never included Dearborn. Some people of Dearborn might have been a little concerned. Hey, what about our water? We get Detroit water. Now, for some reason, it's just what was flowing through the pipes in this rather large area, contiguous area, Detroit. And you were suggested not to drink it from the tap, but to boil it first. I don't know for how many minutes, but once it comes to a boil, maybe that's good enough. And then you could drink it if you had to. This is part of infrastructure issues. You know, and I'm happy to see that in my neighborhood, they're going to redo all the water pipes, which means tearing up the street, digging into my yard as well as the street. They're going to have to resurface the street. But that's being done at all places in Dearborn. I live in the east side in a neighborhood over there, and we've just gotten the notices that in the last couple weeks of March, oh my goodness, there's going to be a lot of upset. And it could go on for as much as 12 weeks, although probably nobody is going to be, kept from their own house for more than a day or two. They'll find ways to do it so that you're not inconvenienced very long. But that's good to know. Now, of course, the water pipes from the street to my house, they're not replacing those, but hopefully they're not too contaminated, since Detroit does put that anti-corrosion chemical in the water, which really makes it delicious to drink too. Anti-corrosion, just think about it. Your system will not corrode. All the iron in your body, in your bloodstream, will not corrode. Oh, that's impossible. I'm sorry, just a bad joke. Supposedly, the anti-corrosion chemical is not toxic. That's what they say. Okay, not starting any rumors here. Just always wonder about all the additives in our environment and how well they have been tested. That does raise some questions, doesn't it? And looking down the line here at stories, as long as I'm on the MichiganRadio.org website, we mentioned about water and infrastructure. And so the Great Lakes Commission has ideas where some of this infrastructure money, and President Trump said, you know, maybe $1 trillion, a couple trillion dollars for infrastructure in his address to Congress, not a state of the country address. It wasn't that, because you can't do that until you've been in office at least 1 year. I mean, what does he know now? He just barely got there, right? I don't know why, but you can't call it State of the Union address officially. It wasn't addressed to the Congress. So here's a report about what to do with the infrastructure money in terms of improving water in and around the Great Lakes area. Let's take a listen to that directly from Michigan Radio.
We have a lot of old water infrastructure. So what do we do about it? This is the Environment Report. I'm Rebecca Williams. President Trump called for a $1 trillion investment in infrastructure this week in his address to Congress. The Great Lakes Commission has ideas for where some of that money should go. The commission is an interstate compact agency that represents Great Lakes states. Matt Doss is the agency's policy director. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, glad to be here.
Your group has just come out with recommendations for rebuilding our water infrastructure. What are the biggest problems that you're seeing?
You know, really, we have underinvested in our water infrastructure in this region and the country as a whole for a long time. So as a result, we have a huge backlog in needs to upgrade and maintain both drinking water, wastewater, and stormwater. EPA has estimated that nearly $400 billion is going to be needed through 2030 just to maintain our nation's drinking water system. Nearly a quarter of that, $100 billion, is estimated to be needed in the 8 Great Lakes states. Similarly, for water infrastructure, EPA has estimated that $250 billion is needed to upgrade our water infrastructure to make sure we can treat and dispose of our wastewater effectively. Nearly a third of the national total is in the 8 Great Lakes states. So again, as a region, we have a huge need and challenge in that area, and we're just very excited to see the proposals coming out for investments in this area.
Why do the Great Lakes states have such a big percentage of the need?
Well, it's largely because we have a lot of older cities, and many of these cities, of course, have old infrastructure. Most of our water infrastructure is between 50 and 150 years old, and so those systems are old, they haven't been maintained, and they need to be upgraded. So large cities like Detroit and Chicago and Milwaukee and Cleveland and Buffalo. In some cases, we have what are called combined sewer systems. That's where wastewater and stormwater, the runoff from rain, go into the same pipe. So when you have a large rainstorm, it overwhelms those systems and they overflow. And that's what leads to sewage and polluted stormwater going into our waterways and closing beaches and really, you know, posing a threat to public health as well as local economies.
You mentioned $100 billion to upgrade drinking water infrastructure in the Great Lakes states alone. Where will that money come from?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a big challenge we face. This is an expensive challenge, and we'd like to see federal investments, but there probably also is a role for private investment, and there's a lot of different ideas out there. There's a program called WIFIA, which is a Water Infrastructure Financing and Innovation Act, which looks at leveraging private investment to with public investment to get this job done. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and that's a big question in Washington about how we're going to pay for this.
States rely on federal money, things called revolving funds, to upgrade drinking water and wastewater systems. Is there enough money in those funds right now?
Well, probably not. Certainly not for the demand we face. So we have long advocated for increasing funding and strengthening the way those funds are used. They're called the Clean Water and the Drinking Water State Revolving Funds. And basically, the federal government provides funding to the states to provide low-interest loans to communities to upgrade drinking water and wastewater systems. It's a very effective program, but it does need more money. They do need to look at improvements to streamline it and also look at what to do for communities that are struggling economically. They can't take on more debt burden. That's a real challenge, and it's something that Congress, together with the states, really needs to address.
Matt Doss is the policy director for the Great Lakes Commission. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Great to be here.
That's the Environment Report. I'm Rebecca Williams.
Thank you, MichiganRadio.org, for letting us share that. You can all, of course, go there and listen for yourself to reports. Most of them have the audio component because they're a radio network throughout Michigan. The only news service in Michigan right now that has a full-time reporter in Lansing. They have a full team in Lansing covering Lansing governmental issues, not just when there's a crisis. So that's a great, great thing. However, what we just found out, and that report is recent, I mean, it's as of yesterday, and that was because some people got excited about that $1 trillion for infrastructure. But apparently, protecting the Great Lakes is not in that. This is from MLive.com this morning. You know, in fact, it was last updated at 7:26 a.m. this morning. Here's a story. The White House, that is President Trump, is proposing to slash Environmental Protection Agency funding that pays for Great Lakes pollution cleanup by 97%, according to a budget document obtained by the National Association of Clean Air Agencies. The potential cuts are part of President Donald Trump's initial 2018 budget proposal, detailed in a U.S. Office of Management and Budget passback to the EPA. Passback is in quotes. I'm not sure what it means, but that outlines drastic cuts to an agency Trump has called a quote-unquote job killer and promised to reduce quote-unquote tidbits as a candidate. The proposal would virtually eliminate annual Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, that's GLRI funding, slashing it from $300 million to $10 million, among other cuts that would altogether reduce the EPA's total budget by a quarter. Specific program cuts, this is 97% cut out of funding to restore and to clean up and to maintain the cleanliness of the Great Lakes. Now, Detroit technically takes its water from, well, Detroit River or a little further north. I'm not sure where the inputs are. So, well, Great Lake, Erie, Lake Erie, for example, can die. That's okay. But it's all these lakes that have to stay clean. And which state is doing it? States can't. That's a federal thing. Federal money has to do it. Okay. And it needs cleaning up. And for example, in the story that goes on for a couple of pages here, I printed it out from MLive.com, but you need to go there and read about it too, because the White House also specifically has ordered an Asian carp plan delay. And Asian carp are invasive species of fish that can cause all kinds of trouble in our lakes. They're starting to come up the Mississippi River and in Chicago sneak across some of the barriers there, not real official barriers, between the rivers that go through Chicago and go into Lake Michigan. Once they get into Lake Michigan in significant numbers, they can't be stopped. They will overpopulate, they will do all kinds of things to pollute and destroy our lakes. And so cutting back on a major plan to prevent this invasion is the wrong thing to do, as well as cutting the $300 million to almost nothing to restore the Great Lakes. I mean, has President Trump come here and does he want to drink from the Great Lakes himself? Take a cup of water and down it to see how it tastes. You know, what about those algae blooms and so on? That's in the lakes. And we have to do things to keep those clean. It's the largest freshwater bodies in the world, our three Great Lakes. And I think in the future, a lot of us are going to need clean water to drink, because there's a lot of other states that would like to just siphon it off, in fact, because they don't have as much clean water as we do. But if the Great Lakes go down, I'd say the whole Midwest goes down. Without water, people are not going to live there, unless it's like Flint, where nobody wants to buy their property, so they're kind of stuck there. I'm sure everybody in Flint, if they could sell their houses for what used to be the value, would probably move. Aren't that many jobs anyway, from what I hear. Not much of a city left. Although the latest is that the mayor of Flint, I just heard this morning somewhere important, like NPR, that she has filed for a federal grant to continue support to keep their water as clean as possible, and that within 2 years, she thinks that maybe people in Flint could drink from the taps again. That's great, but they have to keep getting money. And, of course, the state of Michigan has already said, whoops, we're not going to pay anybody in Flint back for their water bills anymore. They were doing that. They were paying for your water. Of course, it was water you couldn't drink directly. And it still is that way for most households in Flint. So with the state backing off, and if these cuts to the EPA and restoring the Great Lakes preventing the Asian carp, well, it's just going to be an absolute mess for all of us, and that includes people right here in Dearborn, too, because we have to drink the water from the Great Lakes. And however you can make your voice known, you should, to your representatives in Congress. And you say, well, my representative is against these cuts. And I do believe that Debbie Dingell is, who represents... Well, that strange gerrymandered district from, oh my gosh, Trenton all the way up through some of the downriver communities, through Dearborn, all the way to a small area of Ypsilanti and Ann Arbor. Well, she's not in favor of these cuts, and she will vote against it, but maybe you ought to send some emails or tweets or Facebook posts or whatever directly to some of the Republicans. I'm sure that Republicans in this area of the Great Lakes are going to be opposing these cuts too. Anybody who knows this area, as anybody who lives here, I don't care if you're Republican or a Democrat, you don't want your water quality to diminish. Flint is a bad example. That's just the problem, you might say, internally to Flint. But for all of us, Dearborn has had a very aggressive campaign to replace the main water lines and to make sure that sewage doesn't get into the to contaminate the water supply too. We'll have Mayor O'Reilly here on the WHFR Journal on Friday, March 24th for the full period, and we're just definitely going to ask him about how these combined sewer overflow projects are coming along. Also, because each of us, if you look at your county tax bill, are paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars, depending on how much water you use, every year to maintain that. And I think it could be done 2020, 2025. We're going to ask the mayor when we might be able to stop paying those hundreds of dollars a year for this very special program. But how's our infrastructure doing? Really, in detail. A lot of roads in bad shape, too. So I'm glad in my neighborhood they're going to do the water pipe replacement, because after that, they've got to redo the roads. And my asphalt-topped roads in my neighborhood are just a mess. They've been trying to squeeze little bits of tar in all the cracks, and then the asphalt just comes off in big chunks, and it's like driving over the roughest road imaginable. I think a dirt road would be better than what we have now in terms of being easier on the cars. I'd have to pass over it, except when it rains, of course. So we're moving ahead here in Dearborn. I think we're moving ahead faster than some other communities in terms of at least water infrastructure. And that's good, but we'll talk to the mayor in detail. If you want to ask the mayor a question, especially if you've already watched or listen to our show from a couple of weeks ago here. Our podcast included all of the audio from Mayor O'Reilly's 5 video presentations. And it's all together in one broadcast. So just go there on our website. I'm identified it by name, too. So if you don't remember the date, you just go to whfr.fm. Go to click on the big button in the middle that says talk shows, which we are doing. And then you click on WHFR Journal, which is 2 choices, the Journal or Tuesday Forum, so Journal, and then select the show by date. Or in this case, I specifically put a little information there about which one is the State of the City, SOTC, addresses, really, the 5 statements. And You can also read a great PDF file that Mayor Riley has submitted also on the cityofdearborn.org website. That does go on for about 12 pages, but that gives a lot of specific information that's not in his address, his five video addresses. And you might want to ask a question about that. So you want me to ask a question for you to Mayor O'Reilly, maybe something I haven't thought of already? You can do that. Just send your questions to WHFR at whfr@hfcc.edu. And in the subject line, that's right, you don't have to put WHFR FM or .fm or anything like that, just whfr@hfcc.edu. And in the subject line, put something like questions for the mayor. Okay? And then I will collect those and add them to my list if I don't already have them. We'll try to get them all in. I know usually I have a long list of questions, and an hour is not enough time. But we'll try to get the big ones, the top ones, and if there's any late-breaking stories, of course, then we'll cover those too. That's part of our Radiothon week, our once-a-year annual pledge drive, and we usually always have the mayor in at least for that period. And I know I have a list of over a dozen questions myself already. Okay, so we hope good things for the water supply. Also on the michiganradio.org website, there are podcasts, and, you know, you can subscribe to some of these if you want to and get them automatically sent to your home computer. But we always feature something from Jack Lessenberry. And so let's see here. He has a good comment about Pontiac is a city we almost forgot. There always have new things happening up there. But this is from February 28th. His podcast from February 28th, 2017, that's just this last Tuesday, entitled With Attacks on Our Free Press, This Is No Time to Keep Silent. So let's take a listen to Jack Lessenberry and his commentary about maintaining our free press.
Support for NPR comes from Audible, presenting J.D. Vance's debut book, Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis. Hit Hear More Now to hear an excerpt from this personal account of growing up in the Appalachia region.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. I took my friend Guy to lunch last week, the same day the President of the United States declared that members of my profession were enemies of the people. Guy is one of the most amazing people I know, and I wanted to know what he was thinking. He told me that after the election turned out badly, his father talked to his family at the dinner table. Listen, his old man said, we're going to have some hard times, but we have a constitution and we have a free press, and we'll get through this. That was not, however, this January. It was January 1933 in Hildesheim, Germany. Within 6 months, our constitution was in tatters and the free press extinct, he told me. Guy, who was Jewish, managed, thanks to an uncle, to be sent to St. Louis, where he attended high school. He never saw his family again. I don't have to tell you why. When the war came, he joined an elite intelligent unit known as the Ritchie Boys, landed on Normandy right after D-Day, where he spent months getting Nazi prisoners of war to spill their military secrets. Guy's 95 now, and as mentally alert as he was when he was provost of Wayne State University, where he was also a distinguished professor of German literature and cultural history. He still goes on lecture tours, primarily in Germany. On July 4th, however, he'll be in Paris, where the French government will officially make him a Chevalier of the Legion of Honor, the nation's highest award, for what he did for their country during the Second World War. Stern was in Germany on this last election night. When he woke up, he told me his first thought was that, I thought I knew my country and my people, and it turns out I didn't. By his country, he meant America. He's as proud an American as one who's lived here for 80 years can be. Kindly, gentle, and elfin, he's never allowed anyone to tell him what to do or think. When he decided to become a professor of German literature, he was asked how he could do that after the Nazis. I'm not going to allow them to claim my language and literature, he said, and he didn't. He's worried now, yes, but he knows too much to draw glib parallels. Things are different. This man is no real ideology, he said, of the current occupant of the White House. Our Constitution has also been in force for 230 years, compared to less than 15 for that of the doomed Weimar Republic, and it contains stronger protections for press freedom than any nation has ever had. Still, I would have been a history professor had I not become a journalist. I can say that I never could have imagined we'd have a president who called the press enemies of the people, a phrase so evil and completely Stalinist it was banned by Nikita Khrushchev. Edward R. Murrow, during another scary time, said, This is no time for men who oppose another demagogue's methods to keep silent. I don't think any of us should. Guy Stern, who once would have been my boss, wouldn't expect any less.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
By the way, the little plug they gave before it started was not a commercial. I know it might have sounded like commercial, but it isn't. It is a sponsorship, and it was not telling you to buy. It just said this book is available and on a particular internet service, and to find out more about it or to listen more, you just had to click if you were already at their website there. So just took up our time, and I'm sorry about that. Didn't realize it began with that plug. But that's how you have to support non-commercial media, is by having these non-commercial mentions, as they're called, sponsorships, underwriting. And WHFR can do that too. So we can't tell people to buy your product or service, but we can say thank you for any donation you have. And if you want to do underwriting with us, a sponsorship of a show, like this show, even, you can contact our general manager, Susan McGraw. Easy to remember her name, Susan McGraw. And her phone number is 313-845-9842. And she'll tell you about our sponsorship rates, underwriting costs. And it's very reasonable, especially for local business of one sort or the other. Can't do political ads, so. So all you politicians running for office, no, you can't. We can't take political ads because the FCC says that is advertising. It is a commercial, and so we can't do that. But we can do other thank you type sponsorship things here at WHFR. So coming up from the League of Women Voters, too, it's not too far away, just a couple weeks, on Saturday, March 18th. They're doing a two-hour meeting at Christ Episcopal Church Fellowship Hall in Dearborn. It's at 120 North Military at Cherry Hill. And they're doing a special session on, that's entitled Effective Political Action. Attendees will learn who their elected officials are, how to contact them, and how best to share their concerns and opinions. Local officials and legislators have been invited to share with participants their own ideas on what kinds of constituent communication works best. We don't have a list here yet of who's going to be showing up, but some of them, I assume all of them are invited, so we'll see how many will show up. Information will also be provided on how to get involved in organizations and local groups working on issues of timely interest, such as civil rights, the environment, voter access, government transparency, and freedom of the press. There will be time for interaction with legislators and other participants to share tips and information and to network with local citizens concerned with issues of mutual interest. The meeting is free and all are welcome. Light refreshments will be served. For more information, you can go to League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, and that's just like it sounds, LW, but just the letters, LWVDDH.org. Okay, so that's the effective political action, how to do effective political action. More important these days than ever, as they say. And, of course, in any democracy, it doesn't matter who the president is or who the governor is or who the local representative is. If you are a citizen here, and I know many of you are, then you should be participating. You should be letting your elected representatives in this representative democracy what you believe in and how you feel on the different issues. And if you can't, you say, well, I vote. Well, that's something, but it's not everything, because what happens in between? If the representatives don't hear from you, they may just do something they think you want, and it's not what you want at all. So there's many ways of getting involved, and this is not necessarily a recruiting thing for League of Women Voters. They're just sponsoring it, and there's going to be many other groups there that you could join and be part of for maybe specific issues such as civil rights or the environment. I'm sorry to say I was not able to attend their conference this Wednesday. It was in meetings here at WHFR. Wednesdays are our meeting nights. Stop the Nuclear Arms Race, Universal Declaration on Disarmament. Some great presenters were there. That was this last Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. Oh, well, the event was free and open to the public, just like the Effective Political Action on Saturday, March 18th. By the way, March 18th, mentioning that, our WHFR Holistic Fair, which is about all things metaphysical. And don't you love them? I hope you do. It's a very entertaining and informative day we have planned. There is a slight charge for admission, $5 a person. It goes on from 11 to 5 on March 18th. So when you're done going to the Effective Political Action meeting out at 12 there, then come on over to Henry Ford College, and in our student center, the Holistic Fair will be going on and for another 5 hours. So there is food, there's beverages, and it all goes to benefit WHFR, but in terms of the entry fee. But other than that, there's things you could buy or purchase or books, and you can talk to the different vendors about things for free, of course. You might even be some people, I haven't looked at the list of participants, but there might be people doing some free massages. There, of course, there's typical with metaphysical arts people that do prophecy, or at least reading you one way or the other in terms of your the nature of who you are and what you believe in. And you know, it's, we don't recommend, we don't say it's going to be the real thing, except professionals are going to be doing it, people who do this for a living, and that they get paid regularly from a lot of people to read your future possibilities and even talk about your health. And there's numerous approaches to that, not just tea leaves or tarot cards. And we have a variety of people working with that. I usually like to go to the people that talk about the power of crystals, different kinds of stones, as if they have some healing or some other effect on your body. And even if they don't, I think a lot of these stones that they bring here, the crystals, are very pretty and reasonable prices. So I usually just get a few for my granddaughter, because she's got a collection of pretty little stones. Whether or not they're, you know, directly healing, she likes them. So hope she can come over to this on the 18th. So that's right after, right after Effective Political Action, coming over to the WHFR Holistic Fair. It's also called the Festival of Enlightenment, just so you don't get confused about that. Okay, let's see, anything else happening short-term for Ligonier voters? No, not right now. Okay. However, speaking of voting, boy, we're into voting today. There is another group, several groups, that will be at very soon, March 7th, that is next Tuesday, I believe, at the Arab American National Museum from 7 to 9 p.m. And what are they doing? Well, they're actually a group called Voters Not Politicians. Well, it's going to be a town hall for Dearborn residents to learn more about the gamesmanship used to draw boundaries of congressional and legislative districts. Okay. And that means, and how to end the abuse, which is referred to as gerrymandering. In other words, the political people in power at the time, that's once every 10 years after the census is done, they get to dictate where the lines are drawn. And they do it to benefit themselves, their political parties, so that voting is not really representative. Well, that's just wrong. And so there is a nonpartisan Voters Not Politicians ballot committee that's going to try to put together, and they have a grassroots organization called Count My Vote, which is MI, which of course is abbreviation for the state of Michigan. Count My Vote. And they're sponsoring the forum in advance of their ballot initiative. They're going to just get the information out about the ballot initiative. If they can amend the Constitution, oh boy, it's a big deal, they can change the way these lines are drawn. Not to favor the Democrats, not to favor the Republicans, but to have contiguous districts that favor the needs of the people that live in these districts. Kind of hard for Debbie Dingell to speak for the specific needs, everyday needs of the people in Trenton and the people in Ann Arbor and everywhere in between at the same time. Because it's a skinny little district that runs in a swoop from Ann Arbor down to Trenton. And it's just crazy. It's also hard for her to campaign and keep in touch. She has an event in Ann Arbor. Do you think many people from Trenton are going to show up? No. So it's hard for her to get the word out, even to have a town hall. This is true not just for Democrats, but, you know, Republicans, oh, they get contiguous districts. They get nice little districts that, of course, in number favor them by just a vote or two so that they can have a majority much more easily in Congress, in U.S. Congress, and also in the Michigan legislature. So that's just wrong, and we need to change that, especially in Michigan, and this ballot initiative could do it. But within a 180-day period, that is 6 months, they have to collect 315,654 valid signatures. Now, they haven't started yet, but you can go and hear about this ballot campaign initiative at the Arab American National Museum. There's this town hall called the Voters Not Politicians. It's called Voters Not Politicians from 7 to 9 p.m. next Tuesday night at the Arab American National Museum. So I highly recommend that, along with things from the League of Women Voters. I do think League of Women Voters Executive Board would approve of your attendance also at the Count My Vote town hall meeting. It's just information, and it's good to find out. And they're not asking for a signature at that time. Okay. Well, only about 10 minutes to go here, the new WHFR Journal. And still a lot of things to talk about. Oh, my goodness, yes. But at 2 o'clock, we have Kitty Love coming up with Highway 61, the best in the blues from 2 to 4. And then we assume Mike Holloway will be here, too, from 4 to 6 o'clock. So 4 big hours of the greatest blues music from so many wonderful local blues musicians and other people you might not have heard of before, and always new blues music coming in here. And Kitty Love, I'm sure, will be bringing a few new CDs to feature on her show today, too. Okay. Tonight, get this out of the way first. It's a big Dearborn Symphony Orchestra presentation. And I just want to mention that tonight's concert was inspired by the whole concept of Romeo and Juliet. Probably not trying to endorse the idea of young people who are in love committing suicide if they have difficulties. That is not a very good idea. That definitely cuts short their possibility for any more love. Nonetheless, it's very romantic. And they've chosen several pieces, a piece by entitled Juliet from Anderson, was a composer, Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2, Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet Suite, and Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet, the Fantasy Overture. And they have a great soloist who is going to be performing, and let me see if I find out more about him. Yes, it's 23-year-old Hungarian pianist Daniel Lebhart, acclaimed by the New York Times as playing with, quote, power, poetry, and formidable technique, winner of countless first prizes around the world at various contests. He's going to be there performing with the Dearborn Symphony. Of course, partnering with Dearborn Symphony Orchestra and conductor Kipros Marku. That's going to be a great evening of entertainment. Concert begins at 8 p.m. in Dearborn's Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, Michigan Avenue. And tickets range from $15 to $35. And you can call the symphony in advance at 313-565-2424 or the theater box office at 313-943-2354. Or you can go to DearbornSymphony.org for more information. So, okay. You know, Valentine's Day has passed. However, this is a great concert, so-called romantic period or romance period in music composition. Although I'm not sure about the piece by Anderson when it was composed, but everybody should really enjoy that. But here's an idea for you. I'd like to end with an idea. So I've only got 6 minutes, but what would you think if there was a basic minimum income? Okay, for everybody. I was reading, and I think I told you about a book on the increase in automation and what it means to lost jobs for the future. In fact, The Rise of Automation, or the book is entitled The Rise of Robots, which is kind of a scary title, but it is really about the increase of automation, whether done by robots or computers or whatever, and where the jobs are going to be in 10 or 20 years. Well, the issue is that almost all predictions by credible sources, professionals, academics whose job it is to predict how many jobs there will be in the future in one area or the other, say that half of all, almost half, somewhere between 45 and 49% of all current jobs of all kinds will be gone in about 10 years. Some say 2020, some say 20, that's only 3 years away. Some say 2025. All of them say by 2030, half of the current jobs will be gone. You say, well, there'll be new jobs of new kinds. No, no. Total jobs available for people to work at, almost half of them will be gone. Why? Because of the increase of automation and computer controls, computer decision-making. It's not just the entry-level jobs. It's upper middle management and maybe even upper management. Why? Because the computers are smarter in making these decisions for many of these areas, as well as manipulating tools and, you know, building cars. And so it's not so much the great sucking sound of jobs going overseas. It's the rise of automation and artificial intelligence. And we can't stop that. There's no way we can stop that. We can't make laws against robots. There's no way to hold it back. We could try. It just won't work because business making private decisions, they want to be more efficient, more productive, and that's how technology has got us to where we are now. So at the end of the book by Martin Ford entitled The Rise of the Robots, he surprisingly does a turn and say that in the future there won't be as many jobs. So what we need to do now is think about and plan how to give a basic supportive income to everybody. So if you're out of work, you still will have a basic amount of money coming in. And it's like unemployment funds or whatever. And you might say, well, that's unsustainable. Imagine what if we gave $18,000 to $20,000 to everybody, even people with jobs? Well, that'd be great, right? We'd all have more money. So, well, the country can't afford that. Yes, it can. Yes, it can. If we eliminate all welfare, think about it. If we eliminate all welfare programs, we can afford to give everyone a basic minimum wage. And I know everybody thinks that's crazy, and all the people that have written articles about this. I'm looking at an article from The Nation magazine from last year. But the big question is, and it was a question raised in Europe more often, in Switzerland, they had a vote last fall for whether or not they would institute a basic minimum income or basic income proposal for everybody. Well, it's a very well-to-do country, and so the idea wasn't real popular because you don't want to pay money to people for not working, right? Well, we're already doing that with welfare, all right? And this would be a very fair way to go. There are some complexities about it. Well, it turns out that Switzerland turned it down. Only 23% voted for it. However, I just got a book here, and I'll conclude with this, and so maybe you want to find this somewhere. It is by Robert Benz. That's B-E-N-N-S. So not like the car, B-E-N-Z. No, not that way. It's Robert Benz, B-E-N-N-S. And it's entitled Basic Income, How a Canadian Movement Could Change the World. So this is this guy, Roderick Benz. He has traveled through Canada talking to all kinds of people. He talked to a few Americans, too. And his book is a summary of all his discussions with politicians and so on that he's done for the last 2 years, all the Q&A sessions that he did. And, of course, the idea is pretty big there. In fact, as he wrote this book in early October of 2016, a basic income pilot program is about to be announced in detail by the province of Ontario. Did they go ahead and announce it? I don't know. It's a big deal with worldwide ramifications within the basic income movement. Ontario is Canada's second largest province in the area, covering more than 1 million square kilometers, an area larger than France and Spain combined. And it's the largest province by population, with more than 13.5 million people. And it generates more than 37% of the Canadian GDP, gross national product. And so we'll see how that works there. They are thinking, however, of just supporting $18,000 to $20,000 for people who don't have a job. And I think that's the wrong idea. I've read some other books. I'm reading a couple more. We need to actually give this to everybody, because what if you get a job for $20,000 a year and all of a sudden you lose the $20,000? Okay, it's just kind of unsettling there. So I think there has to be a transition period. But we do have some advocates here in the station who are jumping up and down about the idea. But you have to read more and think about it. It is not crazy. It is not crazy at all. And in fact, if automation and robots take all of our jobs, and then they're very productive and they're, you know, that we can afford to do this for people. Now, we don't want to take away the incentive to work. But there's so many things you can work at officially. But maybe you could do community service. You could support volunteer groups, or you know, you don't have to need money as long as you have a basic guaranteed income, a basic one. So read and study that. It's not too crazy. I thought it might be, and I couldn't believe it was in this book. But it looks like in the future, when we lose 50% of all jobs because of automation, robots, we're going to have to do it. Okay, so think about it. Basic income. Maybe you want to get the book by Roderick Benz and read that, because it's happening, close to happening, in Canada, in Ontario, right across the way. I'll try to update you on whether or not that pilot program began last fall or not. I think Justin Trudeau would have been for it. Okay, we've got to move on. It's time for Highway 61 here at WHFR. Time for The Best in the Blues with Kitty Love. It's WHFR Dearborn, and we'll see you back again here next week, Friday. Take care out there.